Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City, online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
After that, don't need an opening statement, right? That's the best opening statement that you could ask for. As a coach, very grateful for those guys, their commitment to not only the program, but to their own personal craft. I think when you make a decision like that, that's as purpose-driven as your decision is. Purpose-driven in the sense from a personal standpoint, from a team standpoint, from a program standpoint, it speaks very loudly, you know, for them as people, them as competitors.
That's Coach Cristobal before he took to the microphone today, after Thomas Graham, D'Amador, Lenore, Jordan Scott, and Austin Feliu announced they were coming back for their senior year. And Mario Cristobal, Avalos, they're very measured, super sharp, super successful guys. And the way they present things is admirable. What do you think the odds are that they had a behind closed doors moment locked away somewhere, like, yeah, just very pleased with the decision? You know, you stand by your guys, especially it's never, it could be for the season you'd rather have them there, but when guys go on to have successful NFL careers or NFL careers, it's a positive reflection on your program. But you know, we already knew that impact players, Troy Dye, terrific player, one of the best linebackers in the history of the program, which have had a hell of a lot of good linebackers. Lamar Winston, really important player, like Dye and Herbert, class of 2016, played as freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors, and are now moving on. Bryson Young, another contributor, along with Drayton Carlberg, Hockey Woods, who, while he wasn't a frequent snap getter in the secondary, though he played, I don't know if there was a better special teams guy. So they were already going to be down those guys. And no, if you look now at Feliu, Scott, Thibodeau, and somebody better call the Popo, Amuvai. DJ Johnson is just going to be a junior. Gary Baker is leaving. But now with Funa, Slade Matutia, Samson New is back. That 39 MJ Cunningham got on the field for some snaps. There's not going to be a case of leaning on someone brand new or raw. The red shirts and the true freshmen who get in are going to have to stand out amongst the a really talented group. And like the secondary, I mean, when we get Athlon and Phil Steele and USA Today and ESPN and CBS start putting out their previews and they start listing unit by unit, and when you see Graham and Lenore, the starting corners, return with what Brady Breeze became, on top of McKinley and Nick Pickett, what's going to become of Mikael Wright? I mean, my God, the guy is just a mega talent. And, I didn't mention Javon Holland, who might be the best of all of them. So when they start listing secondaries, and coaches Hayward and Williams put their arsenal on display, I mean, are they going to get, you know, it's going to be a lot of low numbers You know, they're first. They're the best in the conference. They're third best in the country. They're I just on and on about the preseason accolades. And I guess with Filiu, Scott, and Thibodeau, probably get some love for the defensive line as well. So, boy, oh boy, when you think about how timing comes into play. So if you're a team that just won the division, the conference, and the Rose Bowl, and we know the most severe blows are losing Herbert and losing the monsters up front, whether, you know, you talk about obviously the center in Hanson, Lemieux, and Warmack, both Aiello and Doc Throck, Calvin Throckmorton, are gone. Now, what's to become of Stephen Jones and Alex Forsythe and Ryan Walk and, you know, the guys who got some rotation time. But if you have an elite defense, man, does that allow you to alter the face of your offense, take less heat. You know, when Cristobal talked about adding a little bit of an SEC flavoring to the program, I mean, the early stages of the Alabama dynasty were run it, D up, and don't let A.J. McCarron or Brody Croyle screw it up. You know, just stay out of the way. Hand it off. We need 17 to 20 points a game.
We've got plenty of talent around you and on both sides of the ball to get this done. Just keep the ball in your hands.
Yeah,
for a little,
yeah, yeah. Your
actually,
ball.
Actually,
be selfish.
Keep the ball and just you can get rid of the ball, but just give it to everybody else in a red helmet. Just do that.
So it kind of comes to fruition here. And by the way, that's for all we know, Shuck or a transfer or one of the recruits can come in and be like, yeah, I got this, and just play out of his mind. And, you know, with the way they've recruited on the interior, who knows how good these guys are going to be.
Well, it was during fall camp, Coach Maribel was saying that he thought they had 8 to 9 starters in their camp on the offensive line. And he's like, there are guys that, you know, are our backups that any other school in the Pac-12 would want to be their starter right now. So I think they've got depth, and that's fine. They also don't know who their offensive coordinator is going to be. It could be very well that Oregon's just going to become a little bit flashier, and it's going to be more like the LSU-Alabama offenses that we're seeing now in the SEC, where it's big, powerful, physical football that's also fast, that also puts up points, that's got plenty
Derek
of talent
Henry
all
fast.
Over. Right. I don't know if
I'm
that
so
fast.
Obsessed with Derrick Henry.
He's a gigantic human being.
Yeah, that picture.
It doesn't make sense.
The listener who sent me that picture, you won the day. Oh, that's the old motto. Never mind. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, it was a good segue talking about Derrick Henry. I'd be remiss if I didn't call it and blow it by the Titans for a little bit.
And why not?
Hey, you know what? They did the unthinkable. They made me forget about how stinky the Blazers were for a whole couple weeks now. So, but I'm super, super, super stoked, and I give them more than a puncher's chance against Kansas City. I think it all depends on the first quarter of that game. If Kansas City gets up 14-0, or you know, gets a couple scores quick, and we have to start airing the ball out and getting away from what we do, then we're in trouble. But I mean, you know, if we can strike first and we can, you know, keep Mahomes and the offense off the field as much as possible by running Derrick Henry, which is what we've done the last couple of weeks, I mean, we got a really legit shot at this.
Yeah, as long as Jim Nance keeps saying the name Derrick Henry, Derrick Henry, Derrick Henry, Titans are going to hang in.
Yeah, you know, and I'm, you know, I think a lot of people nationally are giving Tannehill way too much credit. The guy's thrown for less than 100 yards each game. I'm still not sold that he's a better talent than Mariota. The one thing that he has done better, though, is that he's learned to check down. He throws the ball away. It doesn't take unnecessary sacks. But that's just, you know, comes with experience, I guess. And that's been beneficial. I think the big thing with us is what we do on defense. I mean, we obviously our defensive front has been huge, stopping, you know, that 4-goal stand against New England, stopping Lamar Jackson on fourth down, getting turnovers. I think what it comes down to is we play a zone defense, and typically Kansas City picks apart that. So we got to change that up. I mean, do we double team those speedy receivers, or do we leave Travis Kelce, you know, one-on-one. What do we do? That's the big question mark.
No, I agree. And I appreciate the call, Josh. And look at the Titans, 9-7, a win away from the Super Bowl. And by the way, they have installed both San Francisco and Kansas City as touchdown favorites. So while that's a noticeable number at the NFL level, it gives them more than, as Josh said, a puncher's chance. And, you know, Daquan Jones and Jarrell Casey and the big uglies up front, you know, containing Mahomes. He makes some plays, by the way. That one where he was almost over the line of scrimmage. How stoked would you be if this guy had just said no to football? How good of a point guard would he have been?
That
seriously.
That kind of awareness is dumb. Like, to be able to know that, like, okay, line of scrimmage is the 5-yard line. I can literally go up to
as long
and
as
over.
My heel
I'm
going to
be
dragging
my foot across the line as I'm making this throw. The awareness by Kelsey as well to, like, find a bubble that's not only just like, hey, I've got some open space here, but I've got open space in the end zone at the same time. That's insane. But it just comes down to, If the Titans get the ball and they can run that, you know, super gross 9 a.m. kickoff, Big Ten football of we're going to run it up, we're going to run it at you.
Kickoff.
Well, yeah, that's the best kind of
Purdue.
Big Ten. Yeah, exactly. If they're going to run it at you and you've got to be able to stop it. And Minnesota couldn't stop the 49ers run when they had 8 consecutive plays on one drive
that
ended in a touchdown.
Out.
If you know something is coming and you still can't stop it, it's the most demoralizing feeling in football. And the Titans are just going to say, look, we've got to hope Derrick Henry has a third consecutive 150, 180-yard game in him, because Ryan Tannehill's not going to be able to beat those safeties with his arm. And as fast as the Titans wide receivers are or can be, it's Derrick Henry all day. Like, that's what it's going to be.
The only way Tennessee can slow down
Kansas City is by just saying we're going to destroy time of possession. It's going to, you know, okay, you guys score in 3 or 4 plays. That's nice. We're going to go on a 9.5-minute drive here because that's just kind of what we want to do.
You know, what's kind of interesting about KC is people have to hit update and refresh their file because they are a pretty good defensive team. They made they're top 10. I think they're 7th in points. And remember, they went out and got Frank Clark from Seattle. That was a big loss at the time, but, you know, Seattle was kind of in that spot where they can't pay everybody. And they picked up Terrell Suggs to just, like, yeah, play a couple games and go after the passer. Suggs was like, well, that's kind of what I do. You kind of went without saying.
Hey, thanks for leaning right into my strengths. I really appreciate that. That's great.
I'll tell you what, though. That performance by Kelsey, like you said, it's like blanket, blanket, blanket. I'm going to go over here. I found an opening. He doesn't miss anything.
No, he had the one drop on third down that led to Houston blocking the punt that they returned for a touchdown. And boom, just like that, it was 14-0. And it was just kind of like, oh, this is the start of this is kind of how it ends. And after the drop, I think he had 10 receptions on 11 targets. And everything came in the second quarter. And he just had that monstrous second quarter where, in the blink of an eye, Kansas City went from down 24 to they're down 3 points, just like that. Like, the game had restarted, basically, for them in the second quarter.
You know what's kind of interesting? And sometimes you just, and especially when you follow the NFL, and like somebody like you, you're following your fantasy team. Somebody like me, I'm following my bets. So important things happen and you might not notice. But very quietly, in all the games that Kansas City played this year, what was the one team that ran for more than 225 yards against them? Tennessee. When Henry ran for 180.
Ah, there you
so
go.
It's like when that happened, it was November 10th. It was a full Sunday. And, you know, unless you in that game that Tennessee won, by the way, and it was at their place. But it's like, how many people thought, well, that's going to be big come playoff time? It's like, no. But now you're like, well, that's pretty big come playoff time.
Doesn't make sense.
All right.
There's such a dumb, weird football team with Mike Vrabel is just like, all right, yeah, we'll just have a bunch of no-name Pro Bowlers that NFL experts don't know the names of and they make fun of on Twitter like Deion Sanders did. And, yeah, we'll have a good defense. We'll be 9-7 this year. Next year we'll be 7-9. We'll be 9-7 the year after that. We'll just do this thing in 3 years again. It'll be great.
I made a list because if Vrabel gets to the Super Bowl, you're going to – you know I live for stuff like this. So to be a player, a starter who won a Super Bowl, became a coach, and even got to a Super Bowl, that's a very short list. You're talking guys like Dan Reeves. Ditka, I think, is the only one to win one of each. He won, you know, a couple Super Bowls with the Cowboys. So, yeah, history is knocking on Mike Vrabel's door. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Brian. Brian, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, it's going great, guys. Hope you guys are having a good Monday.
We are. Thank you.
You betcha. I just wanted to call. I am so impressed that those four guys are staying for one more year. You know, and what that shows me, it shows me that what a good school Oregon is. Because it seems like nowadays, everybody, you see, most people, it seems, maybe because we see it, people are trying to get out of school as fast as they can to get to the NFL or to whatever else. And but people are staying here, and that's got to help with recruiting. Because I think the young people, when they see that, hey, those guys are staying in Oregon, they could leave for money, but they're having such a good time, they like it there, it's got to help with recruiting.
Oh, no question about it. And the coaches and the players will be the first one to say it. And as important as it is to get out on the trail as coaches, meet the parents, shake hands, and, you know, talk to the guardians and the parents, when other players are like, dude, you got to come here. You don't understand how special this is. I mean, that speaks volumes.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Have a good one. What the hell is Randy Moss doing wearing an LSU outfit?
His son plays for LSU.
I knew that. I'm an idiot. That's a demerit. Next time I miss something that obvious, that's a buck. I'm willing to. I've already ponied up $10 for losing my Jordan Scott bet, but couldn't be happier about that. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
The thing I realize that's weird about this, that's probably going to make a lot of people that are a little bit older than me feel especially old, to know that Randy Moss has a child who's in college.
Yeah, it makes you want to jump out of
right.
window.
The part that makes it worse is Randy Moss still like is in really good physical shape. Like if Randy Moss had been,
you needed
like,
him for one third down catch, could
oh,
he
yeah.
do it?
Oh, absolutely. He could get out there and probably put it like a little shimmy, a little shake and bake, and probably get by a corner and just, you know, throw his hand up. I got this. I'm open. But that's the thing is, like, he stayed in a really good physical, like, he's kept in shape. If he had gotten out of the NFL and just kind of, like, ballooned and been like, I've got my money, I've got a TV job, I don't really need to work out, I'm still Randy Moss. Like, just, you know, if he had gotten just a little chubby, a little out of shape, people would be like, okay, that makes sense that he has a kid in college because he's got the dad bod thing going on like everybody else does. But instead, he looks like he's, you know, he's still playing in the NFL.
Yeah, the thing with him is because of a few incidents while he was in the league, you know, he liked to toke up. So did he become the guy who threw in a workout as part of his retirement regimen, or was he just burning and ordering pizzas and sitting down taking game notes? So good on him. Because I'll tell you what, he and Woodson are really good analysts. I mean, those guys know their biz. And, you know, obviously, lock first ballot Hall of Famers. And Woodson, I mean, who played that position. You know, you got guys like Darryl Green and Charles Woodson, who's like, what are you doing? You're 36. They're 23. You can't keep up with them. Yeah, I can. All right. If you say so. All right. 284. 8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, that Tennessee-Baltimore game, now you know me loves me some history. And when I throw numbers around, they really got to kind of pop. So prior to Baltimore-Tennessee, all 30 teams who outgained their playoff opponent by 200 yards won. Nope. The Ravens outgained them 530-300 and kind of got their ass kicked. That's unbelievable.
It's the world's worst riddle. Lamar Jackson has 500 yards of total offense. He threw for 350, rushed
turnovers.
For 140. Just there was turnovers
woof.
Or whatever.
I said woof.
You still look at those numbers and you're like, explain this riddle to me. How does Tennessee win this game? Tony Romo was doing the same thing. I think it was just back after halftime, I think it was just after halftime. He's like, I'm looking up at the scoreboard up here, and they got the team stats, and everything's just about even, and yet, you know, there goes Kansas City running away with the game. He's like, he's like
something's amiss.
It's the dumbest riddle that is. The answer is football. In the end, it's just dumb football happened, and we just didn't expect it because we don't know anything.
All right, so I need some help. So I went for the jugular a little bit this week. I mentioned at the top of the show. So I bet a $50 parlay with the 49ers and Seahawks. Pete Carroll goes for that stupid two-pointer, and I would have pushed, so I would have had a few $100 left in my account. If Clemson wins tonight, I bet them at 3-1, I would get back into my account $528. So I started with 50. If Clemson wins, my account would be up close to 800.
$5, good Lord, that's a lot of money.
So what do I do? I need them to win outright. Do I, if I like Clemson, bet a chunk on them with the points? Do I hedge with LSU? Or do I just say, hey, you made a big, bold bet back on October 30th. Just play it out. Don't even infringe upon it. You made the bet. You knew they were going to win the ACC. You knew there was no chance anybody from the other side of the bracket in that conference was beating them. They were looked dead in the water, made three big stops against Ohio State, holding the Buckeyes to field goals, stole that game, and now they're playing this one. I think the wise move, or do I bet the over? The over-under. I'll tell you what, though. I think the anti-hedge is take the points and the under because you don't want to get in a shootout with this team. You want to be able to run the ball a little bit with Steve, ETN, with Je m'appelle Etienne, even though it's ETN.
C'est Etienne, no?
Yeah, Je m'appelle Etienne.
But that's the thing.
Où allez-vous? Je vais à l'école.
Both of these defenses.
Ooh, la bibliothèque. There it is. That's 3 years of French.
Both of these defenses are really good, but all of the offenses can score really fast.
I know. They scare me.
And that what's the over the lines at
66 and a half.
Oof. That's a lot of points.
Yeah, you're talking 10 touchdowns
to these
cover.
Good defenses.
Playmakers, mistakes. You know, the bottom line is, as magnificent as he's been, this is Burrow playing for a natty already. Clemson, I mean, with Lawrence, they've already beaten Alabama for a national championship. All right. Before we break, when was the last time you heard about a company lowering prices? Well, that's what we got going on now at Big Al State Farm. Rates are dropping. So if you're not already one of the four drivers in Eugene with State Farm, now's a great time for a quote. Give them a call, 686-1522. Stop by the office, 1195 Cal Young, right next to Dairy Mart. No obligation, free quote. Now we're going on 7 years ago. My wife and I did the same thing. We compared, we saved, could not be happier. Top flight pros, reliable every time we've needed, whether it's a question, whether we were buying a new car, making a claim. There are homeowners insurance holders as well. 100% of the time, they bat 1,000. They rock. Big Al State Farm on Cal Young next to Dairy Mart, here to help life go right. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Nick will have a Coors Light update, and we'll hear from Coach Cristobal, who addressed the media today after the big news. Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Talking to Trevor Lawrence today, he said maybe even a season ago, he felt as though he made the moment a little bigger than it needed to be. And now having been there before, this feels like just another game. And remember, they've had a longer time to prep. Dabo Swinney says that one of the best practices they've had all season was a walkthrough in a hotel ballroom on Saturday. So this is the thing that Clemson is starting to get used to. And also, I think something that's special about them is the chemistry that's built over time.
Maria Taylor, who works the sidelines. Tonight's Natty, LSU Clemson, just past the top of the hour. Welcome back. Sports Talk 95.3, The Score, the Monday edition. We'll wrap the 4 o'clock hour, per usual, with Lighten Them Up. A lot of worthy candidates. As far as Oregon basketball over the weekend, the men get the sweep at home against the Arizona schools with a nice performance, keeping them at bay Saturday, then closing the deal with some big possessions, Justin Pritchard. The women bounce back from a frustrating loss down in the desert on Friday, winning yesterday. And just past the 5 o'clock hour, we'll talk about all of that with Coach Graves. The Pac-12 Network was interviewing Sabrina Ionescu yesterday after the game, and it was pretty interesting because it's Joan Bombacini, I believe is the correct pronunciation of her name. She was a longtime coach. She's kind of a legend. She's won like 700 games as a coach. She was interviewing Sabrina and congratulated on her triple-double, and Sabrina's like, no, I didn't have 10 assists. And she looked at the score sheet and was like, whoa. And then in typical Ionescu style, she was like, I don't like that six turnovers. But they get the W, and I'll talk with Coach about the fourth quarter on Friday was unbelievable, because I ran into a couple people Saturday when I was out shopping, and man, some of y'all expect perfection and just have that attitude. Forgot one of the people I ran into. Well, they got out coached. Oh, they're in a lot of trouble. And it's like, it's one game. It's basketball. It's not football. And who's the best shooting team in the country? Oregon. You know what they shot in the fourth quarter of a close game? 5 of 17. Arizona. Arizona State game. Sorry. Friday. Got my day screwed up. Arizona State hits less than just under 40% from the field. They're not that good a shooting team. You know what they did in the fourth quarter? 9 of 13. I mean, sometimes it's just not your day. You're on the road in conference, long season. It's like, man, some of you just carry around that gloom and doom button. Like, well, aren't they supposed to crush everybody in their path? And so I went back and looked. You know, you go back to the years when nobody was even getting a whiff of UConn. All right, it was different. But you go back to 2016, the national championship winner, 16, 17, I can't even add. So it's 2017. Notre Dame 1 year and Mississippi State the next. Those teams lost in conference in January and won the national title. Last year, Baylor was a little bit different because they only had one loss all year. They pretty much crushed everything in their path. So, yeah, if you're going to hold the mirror held up to UConn, who didn't lose for 3 years, yeah, then maybe you get nervous about a loss. Otherwise, first of all, Arizona State had an historic weekend. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, I wanted to get into this so we can come back and have plenty of time for Light 'Em Up. But the announcement today, Thomas Graham, D'Amador Lenoir, the starting cornerbacks, your starter on the nose, Jordan Scott, and another inside lineman who starts and is an important player, Austin Feliu, all announced that they are, in fact, foregoing the NFL draft and returning to play for the Ducks for the senior year. They addressed the media. We played that about an hour ago. And now, after that, the first part of Coach Cristobal addressing one very happy attendee. So here it is. 95.3, The Score.
All right. Good morning again. I think after that, don't need an opening statement, right? That's the best opening statement that you could ask for. As a coach, very grateful for those guys, their commitment to not only the program, but to their own personal craft. I think when you make a decision like that, that's as purpose-driven as their decision is. Purpose-driven in the sense from a personal standpoint, from a team standpoint, from a program standpoint, it speaks very loudly, you know, for them as people, them as competitors, them as teammates. So, again, we all know how special the University of Oregon is. And, again, to be to have those guys as part of this family, to have the kind of season that they had and want more, to be part of an athletics department, right? Thanks to Rob Mullins and the administration for providing us with the resources where our basketball teams, our football teams, our track and field teams all, you know, right now in the top 10. It's quite a statement, and only getting better, just getting started. So with that being said, I'm sure there's a bunch to catch up on. So here we go.
Were you finding out in real time like we were when you're sitting back there? And can you just maybe describe your emotions of just seeing those four guys and the culture that this program has set, that they want to come back and have one more year of that?
Did I find out in real time? I don't know. What is real anymore, right? So, no, we had a chance to sit down with the families. And, you know, when we present information, we present information. And we gather all the data so that they can make the best decision for them. And look, these are hard decisions now. And whether you're a guy that's somehow like positioned, postured to be an early round pick, excuse me, or to be a little bit later in the draft, those are great opportunities. There's a lot to weigh because, you know, football sometimes can be very unforgiving and, you know, career paths are set or unsettled with decisions like this. So, you know, we had the opportunity to sit with them and their families, and they were awesome. They were incredibly. And at the same time, thankful for Hawk and everybody else that helps us gather that information, present the right stuff. So we got a little bit of a heads up, you know, early enough. So kind of like a football commitment video, right? Prospect. So it was all good. Second question, I apologize. What was the second question? Yeah, well, you'll probably hear me say this a lot. You know, when we get on a message, we stay on it pretty good about how the things we do here are, yeah, there's a process, but it's a purpose-driven process. And their purpose is strong. Their why is very strong, and it's very clear. And when you have that, it allows you to work tirelessly for that and to work in conjunction with the rest of your teammates, colleagues, or whatnot to make things a reality. You know, there's the power of belief is great, but the reality of work and preparation is also just a bigger part of it. Those guys are willing to put in the work. We all got here together. I remember arriving here, having to play a basketball game. I mean, I didn't play. I actually just kind of watched Justin Herbert just like slap away coaches taking shots over at the arena. But I also remember meeting Jordan for the first time in the cafeteria. And he's like, "Hey, you're that guy at Alabama." I go, "Hey, you're that guy from Florida." You know, so that was interesting. And seeing Thomas, who had been a guy that camped with us at the former place I was at. So it's kind of neat. It's kind of neat being on a ride that just saw a bunch of great seniors move on to the next step and saw the guys that came in with that class now take their final step.
Mark, a lot of these guys cite the academics and are on track to graduate, but in Jordan's case, since he already graduated, and I'm sure still working through the master side of things, as of the Rose Bowl, he wasn't sure if he was registered for class. Right. How much went into that decision where he knew he wasn't going to be a first or second round pick when he got that feedback, but nevertheless, other than pass rush, it's hard to argue what a zero technique can really improve on necessarily by coming back. So what was the conversation there with him specifically?
Well, Jordan, I think, is more than just a zero technique. He's a shade. He's played the two. He's played the three. I mean, he continues to improve his strengths, his power, his functionality. I think the diversity, the versatility that this defense allows him to showcase is going to be really important for him going into this spring and going into the season. Like he had mentioned, his ability, or I would say his pass rush plan, because he has the ability, but more technical and fundamental and the approach to his betterment is going to be critical. And you know what? When you have your diploma in hand, things kind of slow down a little bit. You know, I'm not saying it's like the NFL where you don't have to go to class at all, but it can slow down where you could, now your focus and your time invested in your craft can increase. And he's that kind of guy. And again, you watch every single year what he's done with his body, what he's done with his play at the line of scrimmage has been really impressive. He could take another massive step this offseason.
I'll ask you the same thing I asked the four of them. It just seems like a trend that there are so many student athletes within Oregon athletics that are choosing to come back for their senior years. And that's rare for it to be an athletic-wide thing. What do you think from your perspective that just kind of means or says about Oregon in general and being a part of this culture?
Well, the neat thing about it, you're seeing all kinds of different, I would say, guys and gals that are postured differently in their respective sports, and then making the decision to come back, kind of, again, hate to be redundant, but speaks loudly of the university, the administration, the commitment to the student athlete, right? Because if you travel around the country, you see how people do things. And I think when you stop here at Oregon, you see that the investment, the true investment in the student athlete, it's incomparable. It's second to none. Because the student-athlete experience, the educational side, the personal side, the professional side, everything that goes with it here is just, it's taken to a new level. And it's something that you don't have this 3 or 4 year pit stop again in your life. This is that last pit stop before moving on. And I think they all recognize the importance of the quality of that stop, and not to mention the result, right? And the path that that stop sets you on. So it's become more and more evident. I know parents see it all the time. It's why it just continues to get better and better. So I see it. I mean, heck, if I was going to school, I'd try to stay for about 8 years and be a doctor or something like that. But I'm glad that they're all getting to experience the things that they are.
What kind of influence do you think that those guys could have on some of the younger players, especially by the way they carry themselves and this decision in general?
Culture never sleeps. And leadership, especially from within, from the locker room, will always trump anything else. Good teams can always be good with talent and good coaching, but great teams and elite teams will always have to be built from the inside out. And by that, I mean the locker room and what comes out of there. And they've had a chance to experience really good leadership. Guys that we all know, the story's been told a few times, right? You know, going through a 4-8 season and being able to put your foot in the ground and turn it around. So what can they bring to the table? They could bring everything to the table. And they know that, you know, Thomas had mentioned consistency and leadership. All right, you bear that cross now. When it's on you and you're designated as a leader, there are no moody days, right? Because your goals, your team's goals, their perception, it doesn't quite care about your feelings, right? They want to see you lead a certain way. They want to see you lead on edge and be consistent. And when you do that, so that is a huge step in the development of these guys as it relates to them being the best future fathers and husbands they can be, as well as the best future professionals, the best future student athletes as it relates to next year, and so on and so forth. So is it important? It's, in my opinion, the most important part, because it's the intangible one that requires a lot of focus and a lot of work to get those results.
All right, Ryan.
How close are you to naming an offensive coordinator?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we've done a lot of work before the bowl game, a lot of work after it. Don't rush these things, because when it's right, it's right. The candidates are all outstanding. They all bring something to the table that makes us better. And it has to be, in our opinion, it has to hit on all cylinders in terms of not only a guy that's a great X's and O's guy, not only a guy that can recruit really well. It has to be a great person, has to fit the culture, has to be bought in completely. It has to be something that that really just generates the same type of momentum that we're generating and is completely in. So I feel we're getting closer and closer. I hate to put a timeline on it, and it goes, you know, take a little bit longer, but, you know, hopefully within the week, we can come to a decision on that and move forward.
This defensive backfield could be pretty good this next year. I wonder how excited you are about just seeing the competition with all the guys coming in, the players elevating their play at the end of the season, a guy like Brady, who was a defensive MVP in the Rose Bowl, and then the players you add in this class. Just how excited are you to kind of get going with this defensive group?
Without a doubt. I mean, I think watching Brady Breeze play is an indication of the level of not only talent, but the level of performance that this defense is generating. And I think the best part, one of the best parts about that, is that since we have an open quarterback competition going into spring ball, that's the best way to develop your quarterback, right? And your wide receivers. Put them against the very best out there. We feel that, you know, all these guys are up here today. We feel that they're as good as it gets in the conference and beyond. So we're thrilled to have them. And all that does is make your team better. We're an iron sharpens iron mentality around here when it comes to competition. So yeah, we absolutely love the fact that they all have that as part of their purpose. They want to be able to compete because, guys, let's call it what it is. Here you compete and you go back and you still have your meal card working, right? And you still have your dormitory, everything else. Their future plans as it relates to competition, the rooms they're going to sit in the NFL, well, there's being cut's a reality, right? And practicing to compete is really important if you're going to take that step because those rooms are, in the NFL, that's a shark tank now, right? And it's not very forgiving. And if you want to be good when you get there, you better get used to having someone nipping at your heels all the time for playing time.
No question about it. Coach Cristobal, upbeat. Yeah, another week till you find out who replaces Arroyo as the OC. But for now, let us break. When we return, we're going to light them up next. 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Garrity RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Garrity.com.
Ducks ball, Ionescu down the baseline, flips one in and a foul and then one. Ionescu went down the right baseline, got free, a little step out to give her an angle, flipped it up and spun it off the glass. Double high, Savali Heaver, here's Moore getting all the way to the rim, and Mignon Moore put the burners on, the afterburners, and got to the rim and laid it in.
Yeah, a couple of critical sequences down the stretch. The guards come across with the goods. We'll talk with Coach Graves just past the top of the 5 o'clock hour, but let's wrap Sports Talk, the 4 o'clock hour on a Monday, with this.
Again, Butter. Steph Curry, his 11th three of the night.
Kobe on a spin.
Yes! What a display!
I can't believe it courtside. Neither could we.
Airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
Oh, my God.
How about another? To center field, number 4, Josh Hamilton.
It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Oh, my God! Good! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years.
Thanks, Mike Tirico. It's the best of the best from the weekend. Time to light them up. Steve, you normally go first. You can go first, then.
Well, thank you.
Good.
How about a four-way? What? With a simple announcement, Austin Filio, Jordan Scott, D'Amador Lenore, and Thomas Graham are lit.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy! Scott! Because it's lit!
No idea where anybody but Scott would have gone in this draft had they decided to forego their senior seasons. I'm not 100% sure on Scott, but I bet big he's a first or second rounder. Graham's an absolute NFL corner. Lenore, a talent, to be honest. I didn't even consider him going, so I have not really any thought about it. Filio plays inside, athletic, legit pro. But for purely selfish reasons, and I've said this before, if the Ducks are 0-12, we're still doing pregames and postgames and talking Ducks, getting our register guard people on, or Jorgie, or Joey, or Jerry, or Mosley, they'd be on the show. But this team is now an outprice to win the North. The defense is going to be talked up like the offense was in the point-scoring heyday of Kelly. The secondary is going to be ranked like the offensive line last summer. This is unbelievable, and these dudes are lit.
It's lit!
The Kansas City Chiefs were lit.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy! Scott! Because it's lit!
It was just a dumb, beautiful game on Sunday. The Chiefs looked like they forgot how to play football in the first quarter. Bill O'Brien looked like he was a halfway decent coach, and it all went downhill just oh so quickly. Even Vegas was holding on faith that KC was still in this, as when they were down 24-0, they were still plus 200 to win the game on the money line live betting. any other team is down 24, they're plus like a million. They scored 6 unanswered touchdowns to go down 24, up 17 in the blink of an eye. They were down to just 3 points in less than 3 minutes thanks to some dummy head plays by the Texans. Travis Kelce, 10 receptions on 12 targets, 3 touchdowns, all in the second quarter. Damian Williams rushed for 2 touchdowns, caught a third. Patrick Mahomes, calm, cool, collected, was acting like being down 24 was part of the plan. 51 points in 3 quarters, 5 touchdowns. Just 321 yards passing. When they want to be good, they can be pretty good. It's scary. Chiefs are lit.
It's lit!
Next up, Titans running back Derrick Henry. Henry is lit.
Derek.
It's lit!
What'd I say?
Damn. Shout out Chavy! Scott!
Derek?
Because it's lit!
Idiot. Anyway, first, when the hell did this happen? I actually went back and checked his college career with Bama. As a freshman, he was third string behind T.J. Yeldon and Kenyon Drake. He had 400 yards. Then he and Yeldon each rushed for 900 each, sharing the load. Then as a junior, the Tide won all the marbles. He won 2,200, rushed for 2,200, won the Heisman. And then remember, he went in the second round because, if you recall, for a brief moment, the NFL stopped having running backs. He was a backup to DeMarco Murray as a rookie, then a co-starter year two. Last year became the feature guy, more than 1,000 yards, almost 5 yards a carry. Then this year, 600-yard games, more than 200 yards in the clincher, week 17. Last week, ran around over and through the Patriots. Saturday, just demolished the Ravens and even threw a TD pass. When did he become the most important player in the world? Because he is, and he's lit.
It's lit!
I forgot he threw a touchdown.
A jump
pass.
Touchdown.
Sergio Aguero of Manchester City Football Club was lit.
It's lit! Shout out Chavy! Scott! Because it's lit!
In 2013 on Championship Sunday, Sergio Aguero scored one of the biggest goals in the history of Manchester City. It was his 23rd of the season in stoppage time. He was 23 years old, and it was his first season in England. He is now one of the most clinical strikers in the league and one of the more underrated ones on the planet. He's now 31 his last 9 years in England, and he set records in a massive 6-1 win over Villa this weekend. He got a Premier League leading 12th career hat trick. He passed Thierry Henry as the all-time leading goal scorer in the Premier League players from overseas, aka the greatest non-English goal scorer. 177 goals in 9 years, and he's fourth all-time, tied with Frank Lampard, who is now a manager, Andy Cole, Wayne Rooney, and Alan Shearer. He's fast, he's quick, he can score with his head or either foot. He's just kind of forgotten about, and it's really strange, and there's no other comparisons for a guy who's stuck around for a really long time, been a champion, and still not on many's list, or any topping anybody's list as some of the best in the world. That's lit.
It's lit!
My last one is the Arizona State women's basketball team. They are lit.
Oh, boy.
It's lit! You can't do this. Shout out, Chavy! Scott, because it's lit!
You know, the weekend began with limited fanfare or discussion about them in this league with Oregon, Stanford, Oregon State, and UCLA, plus Arizona in the top 20, but they sure stood up to be counted. First on Friday, they knocked off the second-ranked Ducks, who had everything to play for besides the obvious. With UConn beaten by Baylor, if Oregon swept in the desert, they'd be number one. Then the perfect storm hit in the fourth quarter. They hit 9-13. The Ducks bricked to the tune of 5-17. Then yesterday, they beat number three, Oregon State, with the Beavs having a chance to jump to number one. They play physical. Their coach, Charlie Turner Thorne, is going to be a Hall of Famer. They beat the number two and the number three team in America in back-to-back games. In the history of this conference, only Stanford in 2010 has ever beaten two top five teams in one weekend, and the Sun Devils are lit!
It's lit!
All right, that's a wrap. Just past the top of the hour, we'll talk college hoops with Coach Graves. We'll hear part two of Coach Cristobal's presser today. So hang tight, 5 o'clock hours next, 95.3 The Score.